Good morning. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm going to do my normal press conference walking you through the budget is released today. The paperwork at the desk at the front, I hope you picked up copies. It is a copy of the message, the budget message, and then the slideshow you're going to see today. I'm going to overview that message and then I'm going to continue the, I guess it's a tradition now because this will be the second time. I'm going to have press adjourn into 1A, 1B where I will follow and answer every question you have, but we don't have to keep everybody into that process. I've been asked by non-press folks to let them go after these. So that's our way to do it. And I think it worked pretty well at the State of the City. So we'll continue that process. So please join me in there if you're a member of the press afterward. Okay, if there's one takeaway from this budget, it's this. This budget is defined primarily by a lack of revenue. We have a revenue problem, is what I said last year. I'm wording it differently, but it's the same idea. It's defined by a lack of revenue. And what that means is our ability to balance the expectations of a full-service city with our ability to pay for that has reached a tipping point. And I use that word because we have reached that tipping point, which I'll get to in a minute. So this is the numbers for the total budget, all in. This is all utilities, all the general fund, all funds of the city are down about 1.9% in expenditures and 1.1% in revenues. Now you'll notice the expenditures are still a great deal more than the revenue. That's fairly traditional for our utilities, frankly, and our capital improvement sales tax budgets. We save money over time, and then we spend them down in big chunks. So while the revenue coming in that year doesn't match the expense, we have saved up the money to do that. The one where you hate to see numbers like this is the general fund, and so we work very hard to keep that balanced. And we have achieved that this year through a great deal of effort. We do have a balanced general fund, but not without significant pain. Our four goals for this budget, as they are most years, are to balance the general fund. As a city government, of course, we must be balanced. We can't just sell debt and continue to function. Now, one odd piece is you might think is where a goal is to avoid laying off any permanent employees. That's a clue about how our financial condition continues to deteriorate if a major goal of the budget is to avoid layoffs. Of course, we want to provide employees with some kind of increase in compensation. We recognize it costs more to live every year. The price of commodities does not stay stagnant, even though our salaries have to a certain degree. And then we also want to achieve the goals of the strategic plan. That's the purpose of the government after all. So what are we going to do with the funds that remain? So we have some challenges, and I want to very much point out this graph. This is the sales tax growth over the past 10 years. Now you'll see in 2009 that was the worst year in the Great Recession. Cities lag the private sector when recessions happen, as makes sense because the taxes follow. So that was a year of loss for us. But then we returned to what was our norm. So before the Great Recession, we were used to 5.8% growth each year. And that was normal. And then you'll see starting in 2011, we really started to this trend downward where growth got smaller and smaller to the point where in 2017, we actually were 0.07% below where we were the year before. This year, the year we're in, is tracking to be 2% lower than last year, and we believe that will continue into 2019 to be an additional 2% lower than we are this year. Now, 2% doesn't sound like a big number. It's a big number. We have other challenges. Other revenue sources are down as well. So gross receipts taxes, which is a significant revenue for us, is down. This doesn't surprise anyone, least of all us, but landlines, old-fashioned tech, is going away. Telephones aren't what they used to be. And so the revenue from those taxes is going down as people cut the cord. We also can't look for help from the property tax, quite frankly, because it is so small in Columbia. This is the 10 most populous cities in Missouri. Our property tax rate is in red. You'll notice it is by far the lowest of these cities. Interestingly enough, about the population of Missouri, when you get to the 10th largest city, it's not a large city, right? It is, it's a third the size of Columbia. Two of those cities don't even have fire departments, yet their property tax is double ours. The average here is $1.09. Ours is 41 cents. It's incumbent on me to remind everyone in Columbia, we don't actually pay much in property tax compared to a lot of cities in Missouri. We also have challenges in the transit budget. The costs must again be addressed. Our service continues to experience deficit spending. This is one of the more dramatic cuts we're going to need to make, and I'll itemize those as we move forward. Interestingly enough, in the general fund, while expenditures did go up, we also had to increase the revenue to cover those expenditures. So even though sales tax is down, we were able to look to pilot and, funny enough, property tax to come up with this. But what this doesn't show you, these are just the total numbers, and I know those are important to reporting. The revenues, this was all the revenue there was. They did not rise to match the expenses. So healthcare went up, and that's where the money ran out, right? We'll get to the details here in a bit. So how did we cut the budget to make sure the general fund was balanced? Once again, we're not going to replace the fleet. This is our fourth year of foregoing fleet replacement. There comes a time when we will not be able to do this anymore. I think we're getting very close. You know, how long do you keep your car, right? We are going to have to continue the 45-day hiring delay, which we started in 2016. And then the departmental budget cuts we were able to do are $218,000. I'm gonna spend a little time on this. So for 10 years, we have been doing departmental budget cuts to try to balance the budget. We have tightened our belt every year for the last 10 years to try to provide some kind of raise to employees. As the revenue goes down and costs go up, how do we do that? Well, we find line items that maybe we can live without. And we've always stressed cut line items that don't impact the public. We don't want the service lines to change if we can help it. So we have generally cut ourselves, cut the organization, the internal offices, and done with less service ourselves. So last year, if you remember, we had significant cuts to the custodial service. And let me tell you, they do tremendous work. They make us proud to come to work in this beautiful building. They keep it beautiful. But we have had to accept longer times between cleanings, right? And we have a rule, you know, if you're going to eat food at lunch or a break, make sure it all ends up in the kitchen. Don't throw it in your basket in your office, because it's not going to get emptied every day. That's the kind of level of service cuts we're talking about internally. And I will tell you, we have reached the point where we are out of those things to cut. We can no longer balance the budget on line items such as training, travel, custodial, etc. So any future cuts after this fiscal year, 19, are going to require significant or total elimination of service lines. Now I'll get to that in more detail as we move forward. There are some bright spots. We still have a strong bond rating, and that is due to good fiscal decision-making by the city council and staff. We make the tough decisions to do what we have to do to make sure we can make our bond payments. We've also managed to keep the utility rate increases that we're recommending to the minimum. Our goal is always to try to keep them below $5. Last year, it was $3.24 total, and that means that's the average increase for the average utility customer. This year, it's even lower. It's $2.93 per month increase in utilities. And that is primarily, by the way, just to keep ahead of the debt ratio. That's so we can keep those bond ratings at AA. We have an obligation to have enough revenue to make those payments. This really is intended primarily just to stay above that line. We have seen the continued sales tax erosion, so in FY19, we know we're going to start the year with almost $1 million less than we had the year before. We're going to see $931,000 in reduced revenue from the sales tax in the general fund. So imagine that budget process. We're starting the process by having to find $1 million, right? And that's before we can talk about raises or pay scales. Now, that said, we still continue to implement the strategic plan. That's important to us. The council has set our path on that outcome, those lists of outcomes which we're trying to achieve. We have had impressive results, even though we haven't had a lot of resources to do that. We managed to create savings last year as well as we continue, you know, we create these budgets that balance, and then the staff immediately begins to manage against that limit. That's a spending limit, and we try to come in under that every year, and I'm very proud of the staff for doing that. We've producing smaller and smaller amounts of savings as the years go. And this year, the council will have a little under $1.5 million to decide what to do with from the savings from last year. For the strategic plan, I am recommending these three expenditures. So one, this is the final year of implementation of that strategic plan. It's time to make the next one. So it'll cost about $50,000 to go through that process, that community-wide citizen input process to create the next strategic plan. We want to continue the supplier diversity program. That has, frankly, works minor miracles in our community and really moved to create that social equity we've been talking about so much. And we want to continue our focused job coaching program. This is a bit like the CARE program, but for adults. And so we literally matchmake between people who have a hard time finding work in some of our poorest neighborhoods with employers who want to hire locally. It's been a powerful idea and a powerful set of work. This will continue that work. Here are other concepts that the council has put on the table. They have not made decisions about this funding, but I do provide this to you so you have it. These will be talked about at every session of the budget and must be decided before we approve the budget. So a potential future fire station, you'll notice, costs $2.5 million for a fire station. That's why we use the word concept. There's only 1.5 total, right? So it's gonna, by itself, can't build the fire station, but it's an idea on the table. And you can see the audit there, the police take-home car program is an idea that's being talked about. All of these are concepts at this point, and council will sort out their priorities and how much funding they'll attach to that as we work through the budget. As we do every year, I'm going to filter the rest of the message through the strategic plan. So the headers are about the strategic plan and what we're doing there. Our economy priority, we can be particularly proud of, and proud of our partners as well. We do what we can, but a lot of this work is due to the great work of our partners. So added together, and I won't go through all the details, we've added 1,000 jobs over the last few years. If you look at the unemployment rate right now, it's 2.3% in Columbia, and that just about a little over 2,000 people. So to give you a sense of that, we're making a big dent into this. We only have 2,000 more to go, right? And just to keep an eye at the airport, it is an economic development asset. You'll remember we sort of changed our focus last year from just being a facility we operate into how can we, you know, maximize the economic impact from the airport. So we moved it into the Economic Development Department, and we keep track of things like this. So the spin-off from the airport, these are not airport jobs. We do not have 745 jobs at the airport, but these are the jobs that exist because the airport is there. It's the post office building next to it. It's all the other ancillary businesses out there. And those jobs account for $87 million in goods and services. And of course, as you know, you've reported well, we have 10 times the usage of the airport that we did 10 years ago. Great success story. Social equity. This has been the hallmark of the current strategic plan. It really pervades and is a lens we look through and filter everything we do with. And it's to make sure everyone can thrive in Columbia. I can tell you that more people are thriving in our strategic neighborhoods. We picked three. We used the Tucson stress model, as you remember. We measured a lot of things, not just poverty, not just crime, but everything. Everything you can think of that would describe thriving versus not thriving. And that's what we use to pinpoint these neighborhoods. We've invested in our focus of the services we already provide and then the new services from the strategic plan into those neighborhoods. And we can tell you that things are getting better. And I have some evidence for that coming. We've got an effective community policing function. It has successfully reduced crime, prevented crime in those neighborhoods. And, of course, we've addressed their priorities. We talked to the neighbors. They've told us what they wanted, not just from the plan we created, but what do they want in that neighborhood, and we've addressed those issues. One small example is a basketball court at the end of a dead-end street up north. Moving to public safety, we continue to dedicate $2 out of every $3 to public safety where we have discretion. So of the general funds of the city, $2 out of $3 go to public safety. The remaining $1 funds the other 16 budgets that make up the general fund. This year I am proposing to tackle an ongoing issue. We'll have much more detail in a future council meeting. But we have two parts of our community that are underserved when it comes to fire response. When you look at the survey response times, the number one thing people care about when it comes to fire service, it makes perfect sense. 70% of the calls for fire are health related. We are the basic life support response in the community. We beat the ambulance to almost every call, unless you're really lucky and you're close to the ambulance. So it's an important, literally life and death service. We have two parts of our community that are underserved and do not have 4-minute response times we strive for. The first one is the east side. So this is the part of our community that's south of the interstate and east of Highway 63. So within that quadrant, we have slower response times than we strive for. So we do have funding and staffing already available, and this budget proposes to use that funding to locate a site and build and staff that station. This has been this is possible due to long-term planning. We also have a great need in the southwest, so down in the Thornbrook area, and that whole section, that whole quadrant of our community. This is a community asset. It benefits the entire city of Columbia. And I'm going to spend a little time on that concept. We have had folks say, well, I've got a fire station. I don't want to pay for that one, right? And my response is, you only have a fire station sometimes. Because when anyone in that neighborhood calls, we're coming, right? If you call us, you have a health emergency, we are coming to help. And what that means is your fire station shuts down while they go help someone in that neighborhood. So what we try to remind everyone is when it comes to fire service, health calls, life and death calls, we are all in this together. It is a system service. And if we improve service in one part of the community, we improve service for all of us. Now, if we have a fire station there, someone has a heart attack, calls for our help, we go, we don't have to shut down your station to go. You still have emergency life support and fire service in your neighborhood. I won't belabor that more. There's a lot more to say. But these are system-level services. To do that, we do not have the funding to do that. To do that, I'm recommending that we recapture property tax rate of $43.29 per 100 assessed value to build and staff the station. This will be delved into in great detail Monday, two Mondays from now, the next council meeting. So I encourage you to come to that. There'll be a lot of detail about that. The property tax increase I'm proposing doesn't require a ballot because it's already authority. It's taxing authority we already have. It's a tiny increase. It's about 78 cents per month for the median house value in Columbia. So half of the community would actually pay this or less. Half would pay more. The thing that's great about property tax, of course, is it is a kind of a means-tested tax. The more you have, you tend to have more valuable property, thus you pay more in taxes than folks who have less. So that's the impact, 78 cents per month to build and staff a fire station in the southwest side. I can't help but point out that property tax has not increased since 2002, and we are about a third of what we were in 1949 when we adopted this form of government. So I'll give you an example here. You can figure your own impact. We provide this so anyone who wants to can put their appraised value of their house into this formula, and you can figure out what your actual impact will be. But I'll give you the example on the right. So you take your appraised value, the median house value in Columbia is $215,000. You apply the rollback figure of 19%. I think people don't realize we're only taxing 19% of your house, but that's the number. So that leaves $40,000 of value. You divide that by 100, which gives you 408 taxable units, you might say. Then you multiply that by the change in the tax rate, and that gets you your annual cost, $9.35, which, you know, most of us, though not all, but most of us have a mortgage, and we have an escrow payment built into that that actually gets set aside each month to pay your property taxes. Most people don't actually have to write a check. The bank does it for you. It's a nice service. And now if you're lucky enough to own your home, you have to write the check. So this isn't the same for everyone, but if you have a mortgage, if you had a mortgage on this home, it would be 78 cents per month as an impact on that escrow payment. So I encourage you to put your own house value in there. You can figure out what that impact would be. This is a chart. If you're like members of my family and hate math, we've put some assessed values in here, and we've done the math for you. So if you have a $100,000 house, it's 36 cents a month. If you have a $300,000 house, it's a little over a dollar a month impact. Our strategic neighborhoods, I'm going to move to community policing for a minute. Once again, you know, we have two full years in now. We have seen tremendous results. Everything we hope for is happening in our community, in the neighborhoods that have community policing. We've had a 22% reduction in the eight categories of crime that we care about the most. These are the violent crimes, right? So not only calls to 911, how much crime is occurring, how many calls we get. Shots fired, rape, robbery, aggravated assault, burglary, larceny, theft, and motor vehicle theft. All of that, you add it all together, we're down 22% in our strategic neighborhoods. Citywide community policing plan for the entire city is going to be delivered to the City Council by August 31st. So because of the success of this model, and we have many models we've used over time, we've got the downtown unit, we've got school resource officers, other types of models for community policing. The council asked me to spend 6 months and come up with a very long list of information and come back to them with a plan that would take community policing department-wide and citywide. We are making great progress on that. We will meet the deadline. And I want to publicly thank Sergeant Fox for doing a lot of the work to get us to this point. And we're going to cross the finish line together. More public safety. The new North Police Station we've been talking about for a few years. It was funded in the capital improvement sales tax. We've got the design in process, and we will begin construction soon after. I will tell you I have serious concerns about the steel tariff. We have tried to design the building with steel, as we do with all buildings. When we build something, we want it to last. If the tariff kicks in, we may not be able to build it, and at which point we will circle the wagons and design a wood building and then try again. But we're going to finish this process, see what happens. Right now, we are chewing our nails about that tariff. I think people forget we are the ones who pay the tariff. Infrastructure. Moving to that, as you have heard, there is a water ballot. That's critical infrastructure. It's drinking water. Speaking of which, I will make a shameless plug. There you go. Uh, We both win. I needed to drink anyway. If the voters approve the ballot, it will include a rate increase of 11% over the next 4 years, 3332. And the cost of the average residential ratepayer is approximately $2.71 per month when it's fully implemented. So take a minute, just compare that to the fire station on the southwest side, right? So $2.71 for the water ballot. After 4 years, that'll be the total impact. Public transit's another thing we think about is infrastructure. Our bus system continues to experience dire financial condition. Unfortunately, we've got to reduce our FY19 spend in that service by $450,000, and we have to transfer almost $300,000 from the transportation sales tax into transit in addition to that to just get through the year. There are many changes we'll highlight. Here I'm going to overview them. These will be detailed in a future council meeting. Once again, if you want to follow this, come to the next budget public hearing that the council has. But here are the highlights. We propose ending service at 7 p.m. rather than 8 p.m. on weekdays and Saturdays, effective October 1. That shaves an hour off of our work day, and frankly, you can still commute that way, right? We can get you home after work for the traditional employee. We thought long and hard about this because we want to be a commute option for folks. And unfortunately, we don't have enough hours to be a commute option for non-traditional work hours anyway, so this to us seemed like a fairly low impact change. We try to keep the impact low on our riders. We do recommend going ahead and implementing the Olson study recommendations regarding the reuse of the Wabash bus station and the route cuts that they suggested. We are going to recommend increasing the paratransit fees by $1. This came up last year. We were able to get through the year without doing that. But this year, it's simply required. We're going to have to pass along a cost increase to that. We're also proposing scaling back the paratransit service area to the federally required service area, once again, to save a significant amount of money. And then, finally, ending Saturday service entirely. This would also end special event support that we provide. So, this includes Roots and Blues, True False, the football shuttle. These would all be effective, these last three, June 1st. We have to go through a federal process to implement those changes, but we won't start that without the council's approval. Okay, operational excellence was a major point in the strategic plan because you can't achieve any of the other goals without the staff working to achieve them. And so we embrace things like high performance, but also fair, predictable pay. I just have to point out, because I love this, so I've talked about how low our tax rates are, how little resource our staff has to start the year compared to other cities. And look at the results they're able to produce. In our survey, citizen satisfaction 73% compared to Missouri-Kansas region, and 49% nationally. So this is for the quality of all city services. So we've asked our citizens, how do you feel about city service you receive in general? 73% say two thumbs up. We're blowing the doors off the competition, right? And that's with cities that have a lot more resources to spend than we have. So I'm incredibly proud of staff. Think about, the trash collectors, the firefighters, the police officers are out there every day. They provide great service, and the community recognizes that. Unfortunately, the funding is not available to offer a significant raise. With the operational budget cuts that we made to departments, we are going to be able to provide an across-the-board raise of 25 cents per hour. Now, because that's 10 years of no or minor raises. I consider this a minor raise. It's $520 for a year. I am also recommending one more holiday be added. We surveyed our staff throughout this year because we did know we did not see any windfalls of revenue. We expected another tight year. We were a little surprised by the drop in how far the sales tax dropped. We knew it was going to drop. Anyway, we asked the staff, if you were to have another holiday, what would it be? The overwhelming response was, we'd like the day after Thanksgiving, added to Thanksgiving, is right now what we do is we take usually the Thursday off, come back to work on a Friday. That's kind of a buzzkill for the family, so no surprise, overwhelming choice by staff. So I am proposing that we add that day to our portfolio of holidays. We still trail the county and the state for the number of holidays we give. We've traditionally been pretty stingy about that particular benefit. We did have an increase of health care of 3.3%, which we share between the city government and employees. In many ways, that's a remarkably low number. It's a real victory for the health care side, but it's still an increase. And if you think about the 3.3 compared to the 1.1 revenue increase, you get a sense of why we're still in trouble, right? Still a very small number, and we're pleased by it. I will share with you, I have great concerns, as I've said for the last 3 years, great concerns about turnover and employee morale. You've heard from various parts of the organization. You've heard from line workers. You've heard from police officers. You've heard from many others. It is a problem, and it's a problem that's endemic to the whole city. Whatever funding source we rely on, our entire organization is struggling with empty positions, fast turnover, and, of course, just normal life. We have retirees who like to recognize that they've given their bit to king and country, and it's time to retire. So we wish all of them well, and it's more painful to see them go each year because it's harder and harder to hire. We're not competing very well with our surrounding competition with salaries. We still do well on the pension side. It's a way to keep employees once they come and sometimes attract them. But point there is 20% of our workforce will be eligible to retire within the next 4 years. So add that to this struggle to pay enough to attract employees. It's a big and growing problem. I'm going to sort of end this with a teaser in a way, but we're going to talk more and more detail as we move forward. This subject really comes after the conversation of the fiscal year 19 budget. So the point here is, as I've said before, we've had 10 years of belt tightening. At this point, rations can't get any smaller and maintain the organization. We have to begin. Future budget cuts will include significant service reductions to the public or outright eliminations of service to the public. Because of that, I feel strongly that should not be a staff decision. I feel strongly it should be a community decision, a council decision. It's always, at the end of the day, it has to be the council's decision. But the community needs to be involved in that. The employees should be involved in that conversation, and we can have that conversation together. Traditionally, cities use a phrase they call priority-based budgeting. It's a somewhat simple idea, although it can be very complicated. What you do is simply make a list of all the services you provide and you prioritize them from most important to least important. And yes, something will have to be the least important. Now, that's defined a little differently. You go through a matrix of decision making. What services must be provided by law? So, for example, the state requires us to have a P&Z commission. Okay, that's not cuttable. That stays, right? The federal government has mandates. We have mandates locally. You may also go through and decide in the matrix that, well, is there anybody in the community that does this as well? Are we duplicating a service somewhere? Can we stop and let them do it? There are other concepts about, can you sell the business to somebody else to do, right? Now, those are all painful and scary ideas and concepts, but that's where we are. The revenue has gotten so small and now negative that we cannot continue to operate these services the way we have in the past. We have been on a 10-year plan of becoming more efficient, finding best practices that make us more efficient, trimming where we can, and we're at the point where, quite frankly, every department, I've said this before, every department is 30% understaffed, and we're getting to the point where we're 30% underpaid. We can't continue to provide the service we have. So we're at this point. This process can help us as a community decide what are the services we're going to stop accepting, what are we going to stop providing. It does tee up an opportunity for the community to decide to pay for them instead. Now, there is, that will be a ballot. There is another opportunity, and that is the fact that the Supreme Court ruled that, yes, in fact, states are allowed to tax internet transactions within their borders. So if our legislature finds a relatively simple method to return those taxes to cities, and I believe there are many options out there. One is called the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax. If they finish that process, they've been engaged in it for a number of years. If they finish that, quite frankly, we would not need any new ballots. I believe we are losing $10 million a year to the non-taxable tax haven of the internet. If that were returned to the city, we would not need any new ballots. We would be able to accomplish paying competitive wages and implementing community policing at the scale the council has asked for without a new ballot. So I'm hopeful that that might be an option. Right now, it's not a reality, but I will be working aggressively in the coming year to help make that a reality, if we can. If you think about that, what's happened, our world has changed. The system has changed, right? The internet being non-taxable has removed transactions from what's taxable. So now over half of all the transactions that occur are not taxable. And that's what's resulting in lower taxes, right? So if they become, if they return to the taxable side, we're fine. We don't need any more ballots. We're blessed to live in a community where that's our financial structure situation. However, again, the thing that's hurting us is a lack of revenue. Taking those transactions, making them non-taxable, is creating this problem. If they return to taxability, we will be fine. We will recover. Okay, I've probably hit that enough. That's the budget overview. Again, it goes into much more detail in the budget message, which you can pick up as a printed version in the back. There are many charts, which I think are helpful. And you can obviously have these slides as well. Thanks for coming. If you're a member of the press and you have more questions, please join me in 1A, 1B. And for everyone else, thank you for spending your morning with me.